Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mistress Carrie, weekdays 10 to 3 on WAAF. Podcasts are always online and on your schedule at WAAF.com.
I think it's really smart what they did.
Who?
Tool. They waited all these years and kept all of their records off iTunes and streaming platforms and then released them all at once.
And then they went number one.
And then they went number one.
Yeah.
And all their old records are going platinum and they're all over the charts and their new single drops.
And it's 10 and a half minutes long.
Yeah, but who cares?
But it's awesome.
Yeah, but listen, people need, you know, we used to listen to 10 and a half minute long songs.
I still do. I'm good with it. Mm-hmm. I'm fine with it.
Meshuggah's Eye, it's 19 minutes, I think. 21 minute song. It's a masterpiece.
In case you can't tell, we're hanging out with Tommy from Bad Wolves.
Hey.
Inside the Palladium while they're doing sound checks and stuff outside. It's loud out there.
Yeah, that's why we're in here.
Yeah, I think somebody's going to get a ticket or something. These outdoor shows at the Palladium are
for
a new thing.
Sound ordinance? Really?
I can't believe they're going to let you guys all play that late tonight outside.
We're going on at like 6:50.
Yeah, you're going on early, but like Papa Roach is going on later, and it's like they're going to keep everybody in Worcester awake.
9:45. Yeah, listen. When the Roach comes to town, it gets loud.
Oh, we know.
Yeah.
We know.
They're like super loud. No, it's crazy. Like they're like one of the loudest bands. Like I watch them every night and I'm like, oh yeah. I get fired up. My old ears. Been coming to concerts since I was like 14, 13 in the 90s.
Okay, you got to be careful when you start talking about the olden days in the 90s.
Are they the olden days, though?
They are for you.
They're the golden days.
It's one of those things where if you were going to shows back then, you got to see, like, I was talking to Jonathan Davis because the Korn, Alice and Chains show was last night.
Yeah.
And I was talking to Jonathan Davis about that Woodstock 99 show.
I saw them before that.
Me too, but that show was insane.
Yeah, well, that was like, Woodstock 99 was just like a thing. You know, everyone watched it. MTV played music.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about.
Yeah,
we were talking about
music.
The good old days when MTV played music.
Yeah, but now they don't play music. I don't know, because I don't know why they don't play music. But
reality TV shows, I guess.
Yeah, they have like Teen Moms and I don't know. There's like a new one, Bisexual Island. I don't know what it's called.
I don't know.
It's just like everybody having sex. I'm like, sponsored by Trojan. Yeah, love wins.
Well, in all of the time that you've come through, you were here last summer with Five Finger Death Punch.
Yes.
And with all of the common friends that we both have, I can't believe that this is the first time I'm meeting you.
I know. I'm actually kind of sad that
we
didn't meet previously.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I grew up in New York, so this is like next door for us.
Yeah.
I've been coming to this venue for a long time.
Have you really?
Yeah. The New England Metal Hardcore Festivals,
yes.
I think, have been going on. I've seen tons of bands here from like, I think Killswitch and Unearth and As I Lay Dying and, let's see, Shadows Fall. I've seen Ministry, Meshuggah. My old band Divine Heresy was supposed to play in 2007, but I beat up my guitar player on stage and we broke up the night before. So, as I said, I've been around for a long time.
Yeah,
we got a lot of history.
You've been in a few bands, and one of the things that I thought was really interesting is that when the Snot guys got back together, they asked you to come in and stand in for Lynn Strait, which
is pretty amazing. I'm a super fan. So I knew Lynn because when I was a kid, I used to cut school and bring the guys in the band weed when they were in New York City because I was a teenage drug dealer. I'm sober now, but you could see how that, not a good beginning.
Yeah, no.
So I had known the guys in the band since I was, I think, 16 or 15 years old. And I was like a huge Snot fan. And you know, years later when they did the reunion, Mikey and Sonny called me and they're like, hey, dude, like, do you want to like try out? And I was like, Yes. Like, you can't tell anybody we're doing this. I'm like, I won't tell anybody. You think I want to create competition? So, yeah, and then I got to do that. And those guys, like, we're still really good friends. We might actually do a show next year.
Really?
We were talking about doing a show in Arizona together.
That that famous show where Lynn got arrested for getting a blowjob up against the giant toilet on
stage. Is that what it was?
Happened here.
Yeah, he was naked too, right?
Yeah. It was at what is now the Xfinity Center.
Yeah, do you know what happened when the police couldn't find him?
Yeah.
Then they got him, and he had no ID or no pass on him. So they were like, what band are you in? And he told the cops that he was Dave Mustaine from Megadeth. True story.
I was on the air like 25 minutes away from that Ozfest. I had to go to the studio, and I was on the air, and the phone lines are ringing off the hook. And then a bunch of the bands took the buses up to the studio made a party in the studio, and everybody was laughing about how Lynn got a blowjob on stage leaning up against a toilet in the middle of the show.
A Limp Bizkit's concert. You're right. Yeah. They still have that toilet in storage, you know that?
They do?
Yeah, I saw Wes invited us and the Bad Wolves guys to go see Limp Bizkit in Orange County a couple months ago at the OC Inc. Festival, Muse Inc.
Yeah.
Travis Barker's thing. Yo, Limp Bizkit, hardest concert I've seen in a decade.
Just recently?
Oh, yeah, like the crowd. It was like watching Pantera in 96 with Suicidal Tendencies, you know what I mean, opening up, and
those
Slayer.
Those guys can play. Like, the Limp Bizkit got huge because it was a blast to go and see them.
Yeah. People, it became cool to hate Limp Bizkit, but now it's not. I think they're going to come back around.
Well, isn't Fred Durst directing this new Travolta movie, too?
I don't know about that.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
He directed a movie. I can't remember what it's called. They'll put it up on the screen because I'm an idiot right now because I'm tired because Jonathan Davis kept me up late last night.
That sounds weird.
But
you know,
Durst,
if it was 10 years ago, I'd be like,
Yeah, no.
Just
please,
kidding.
Come on now.
Jonathan's like, hashtag me too.
Yeah. No, but Fred Durst wrote a movie about a crazy stalker.
Oh, okay.
And John Travolta plays the stalker, and I'm pretty sure
wow,
Fred Durst
cool.
is directing the movie.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So
I didn't know about that.
Do you have directing or acting aspirations?
No, but I think I'm getting killed. I'm gonna be a henchman, and I'm allegedly gonna be killed by The Rock in a movie that films in Atlanta in October on our time off. So I said yes. But I don't know how, you know.
Okay, we need to have a serious conversation.
Yes.
Everybody that listens to my show knows that I have a problem when it comes to The Rock.
Like, what, you want to fight him?
No.
Oh. You like him? Like, you're a fan?
I like him, and I'm respectful because he's taken and all that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But he's filmed a lot of movies here.
Yeah.
I just want to know what he smells like. I have a smell thing. Like, when you walked in here, I told you smelled really good.
Oh, yeah, because I took a shower.
Yeah, well, I appreciate
it. I'm wearing John Varvatos cologne as well.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Well, you smell good.
Yeah.
But I need to know what The Rock smells like.
Well, I don't know that.
But when you find out, I need you to call me.
I don't know.
This is serious.
Okay,
right now.
I'll call you.
Because we're like best friends now.
Now, but I don't know how close I have to get. Like, what if he just, like, kicks me and then I die?
Well, I mean, you're going to be in the same air space.
Yeah.
So I just... Okay,
I'll try.
Is that weird?
No. No, I mean, I've had weirder requests. I've had stranger requests. I will try to find out what The Rock smells like. I'll see if I can smell what The Rock is cooking. I'll do my best. He's going to snap my neck for real. Yeah.
I don't think he can sit. Well, look. You guys are all going to work out together. Maybe you guys will like go bench press each other and go in the Iron Paradise or whatever.
Yeah, that would be awesome. We have a gym here.
Like a gym in the Palladium, or you tow one with
the
truck?
No, we tow a full body Olympic gym set with
about
400 or 500 pounds of weight. Yeah. Yeah. There's like, if you look on my Instagram, you can see like me. I'm training Kyle right now. Kyle's been out of the gym for like 3 years, and so I'm training him. And then... I train with the crew guys. Last year in the Five Finger Tour, I trained the security guys, and then I trained with the Nothing More guys. So I just bring out all the weights and we put it up in the morning and then boom, boom, boom.
See, now 10 years ago, there wouldn't have been a gym.
Yeah.
There just would have been crazy parties.
Yeah, there's still crazy parties. There's just no alcohol involved. It's weird.
Yeah. And now what I'm also noticing, and I've been talking to a lot of the singers about it, like Johnny from Nothing More, is the taking care of your voice.
Yeah.
So what, because Bad Wolves, there's a lot of really heavy screaming, but there's also a lot of melodic parts to your songs as well. And so what are you doing to take care of your voice? Are you doing vocal warm-ups? Are you doing warm downs? What are you doing?
I do. Melissa Cross has a DVD thing. She has a DVD series called The Zen of Screaming 1 and 2. And it's got like, I mean, I was on it from one of my older bands, and I think there's like Corey Taylor and Jesse Leach, and I think Howard Jones is on it, and Brian Fair from Shadows Fall, and Keith Buckley from Every Time I Die. But she's also gone on to teach like David Draiman and Jacoby, and I just do her warm-ups before.
So what can you do it? Like what do you have to do?
There's all different, like, yeah, there's just, like just, E's and Z's. So you go zzzz. Then you start with Z's because it opens your nasal cavity.
Okay.
And then you do E's, and then you do ah's, and then there's the French doorbell, and it's and it warms up your vocal cords and how your larynx modulates between three different sections. It's all really nerdy, cool stuff.
Yeah, but I'm asking because even though I can't sing.
Oh, they have. And I'm speaking.
But I get laryngitis a lot, especially when I go to shows. And then everybody that listens to my show, I go in the next day and I'm like, I can't talk. So I'm actually.
Well, you got to project from the right place. It's from your diaphragm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, anyway.
I'll get the DVDs.
Yeah, get the DVDs. Yeah, shout out to Melissa Cross. Yeah.
With all the projects that you've been in and all of the touring that you've done, are you surprised once you put Bad Wolves together how quickly it took off? I mean, you've been singing for years.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, look, there's definitely something to be said about the story of Zombie, right? And that's a song that almost wasn't going to be on the first album. The only reason I agreed for it to be on the first album is because Dolores liked it. So we had done the album and I wasn't sure about putting it on, and the label's like, no, it's really great. And Dan Waite, who works at our label, is a family friend of Dolores and Don, her ex-husband. And he was like, well, what if we send it to her and she says it's okay, then can we put it on? And I was like, yes. And then she called and was like, I wanna be on this, I wanna sing on it, I love it. So then we knew that we had done a good job.
Right.
And like, you know, and then obviously we set everything up, and like she flew to London and she was scheduled to record with us. And as everyone knows the story, she passed away. So, you know, that was like the emotional roller coaster of and grieving process, and kind of, you know, we were never really thinking about how the band had taken off as a result of us paying tribute and donating money to our family.
Which was amazing, by the way. You know, when that song broke at radio and we were playing it, it was so nice to be able to talk about the fact that you guys were taking care of her kids by donating the proceeds song. And it's a really honorable thing because you didn't have to do that and you did, and it was very classy.
Well, I felt like I did have to do that because then the conversation was, we can't put this out. And the only way that we'll put this out is if the money's donated. So the label's like, okay.
Yeah, but that's not like, something right. that I think anybody would have done. I think.
No, I mean, we all kind of came together. The idea about, you know, the other thing too is the owner of our label managed the Cranberries for 10 years of their career. So it was not, you know, it was like kind of like understood. We were like, this is the right thing.
Right.
So, and that's a different story in itself, you know, but that's rock and roll. You know what I mean? Like how many times have, you know, people shown up for each other in the music industry in our genre, whether it's like, you know, David Bowie going to talk to Trent Reznor about getting sober, or, you know, James Hetfield going to help Randy Bly, or, you know, it's exponential. And then there's all the things you don't see, you know what I mean? Like all the relationships you don't hear about and don't know about it. You know, like Chris Cornell's relationship with Chester Bennington and you know, my relationships with Zoltan Bathory and Jacoby, and there's a laundry list of people who are like in the music community. And that's what we're really about, you know? So, is it honorable? Yeah, but I mean, that's what we're, that's what this is, whole thing is about. And I think we just, the success of that song put a spotlight back on rock music, and that's cool to be a part of that. And it came with a lot of fear too. We were like, oh, are we like a one-hit wonder? And then we dropped, you know, Hear Me Now with Diamante, and that wound up going to number one. And then, you know, Remember When just went number one at Billboard and then stayed there for a couple weeks. And it's, you know, that's a heavy song. You know, that's a song about my brother, you know, who's a drug addict who almost murdered me. You know, he tried to murder me during a home invasion when he broke into my apartment. And, you know, it's like these real life situations and these like real traumatic and tragic situations only make sense when we look at them and try to make something positive out of them. You know, when I was making that song, the decision was made that we were going to make a video that was going to be autobiographical. And I remember taking my mother out to dinner and I asked her if it was okay. And, you know, my mom's super tough. I just saw her last night. She came out to Jersey, but she said this to me, and this is kind of where I get what's good in me from. And she was like, if one family can learn from what our family has had to survive, then it makes everything that we've suffered through worth it. And that's literally how, that's what Bad Wolves is about. So we tell the truth. And, you know, I think that's what good art does. I think all the greatest singers and greatest songwriters told the truth, because when we share our pain, we divide it. And when we share our joy, we multiply it, you know? So I always tell people, it's cool to be happy. It's great to be happy, especially if you're someone who used to be sad or miserable or are getting on the other side of something, because people need to see that, you know, it gets better. The biggest problem with anxiety and depression and addiction is that everyone's struggling with these ideas and these feelings. But the delusion of depression and anxiety is that it tells us that it's always going to be like this and we should just end it now. And that's a lie, you know? So seeing people who get on the other side of that stuff, you know, I'm an attempted suicide survivor. I talk about it every day on stage, and it's nothing to be ashamed of. Sometimes life just kicks our ass, and we don't know, you know, sometimes we don't know up from down. It's like people who drowned often, it's because they don't swim towards the surface. They get turned around and they swim further left, right, or down, and they run out of air. You know, and that's okay, you know, but for me, it took the community, it took music and my friends and my family and the community and like understanding that something was going on with me that was beyond the circumstances of my control, and then getting help. And so that's what we talk about, you know, and I think a lot of people are not getting that message. I think a lot of, you know, we have mass shootings in this country, like it's insane. And it's because people have become disconnected. We don't realize we're so in our phones and on social media, and even the way people can respond to each other, to an avatar, is like you can say any hateful thing you want to, like to a picture on a screen, but there's a person on the other side of that.
You wouldn't say it to them to their face.
Well, because not just as a lack of toughness, but out of empathy. It's natural for us that when we're in a confrontation with someone, if we visibly see that we're starting to hurt them, we stop.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's inherent in our nature. We're not made to hurt each other and destroy each other and break each other down. Human beings, from an anthropological study, need each other. And so that's what I want to be a part of, that idea.
Well, that's what I loved when you walked in the room. I went to shake your hand and you're like, no, I'm a hugger. And I was like, bring it in.
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
But we make the crowd hug each other too. Well, you're supposed to have 3 hugs a day to have a good mental health day. Like that's.
Well, I got one already. Yeah. I'll hug you again before we go.
All right,
and then
that's
I'll knock 2 out.
All right. Then you gotta hug a stranger.
Okay.
All right, cool. See,
sometimes I think guys just want to hug girls because they want to squeeze our boobs.
You
could
hug a girl with bigger boobs than you, and it'll cancel itself out. I don't know.
A lot of the stuff you're talking about is something I've been asking a lot of the bands because, you know, you've got this massive discussion that is at the forefront of rock and roll right now when it comes to depression, suicide, addiction, and all of the biggest rock bands out there right now seem to be circling the wagons and having this conversation. Yeah. And then you're also noticing that rock and roll is having this upswing. Like, it seems like in the last 18 months or so that rock and roll has, I don't want to say we're cool again because we've always been cool as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. But have you noticed it with the crowd sizes? And it's just, like this new air in the community now.
Well, I think it's just like it ebbs and flows. And, I don't know. I think like for me, I grew up in New York and I like grew up with great hip hop artists. And hip hop has essentially become like, it's just consumerism. And it's just like pushing products and lifestyle and this, that, the other, which consumers don't, and young people don't know that that's all fake. All the watches and the cars and all the things that these rappers buy, they don't buy them.
Yeah, they borrow them,
they rent them, they lease them, and they're projecting.
That was the big joke with MTV Cribs. Like, you don't own that crib.
They rent them. Yeah. And they, to try to create this idea of, in a sense, it works for a lot of people because of the American dream almost. Because that projecting that is giving people hope who are at the poverty line where I grew up, right? You look at that stuff and you're like, oh, if I do this, then I can jump class systems and then I could have nice things. And that's all that's teaching, and people are tired of it. Like, people are getting tired of that rat race and that game.
Right.
And, and we're watching, Instagram is a perfect example. You know, people are looking at these people's lives and thinking it's like a highlight reel and half of it's fake, you know?
Not even just their lives. Their faces, their bodies, with the filters.
I had an ex-girlfriend last year who was like an Australian model, and she had all these fans, and she had a double life. Like, she was suicidally depressed. I had no idea that she was a drug dealer. She was a cocaine dealer. She got thrown in jail, and she was like, and she got binged for prostitution. And like, she...
But on Instagram,
well, in our life, it was like this person who had been through all this stuff, and we kind of had a trauma bond because she had been through a lot of things. But she was projecting towards me as someone who had done the work to get better. But meanwhile, she was living this exterior life because she didn't want me to know who she really was or what she was really doing. She doesn't want anybody to know.
Right.
And then, we broke up. And all of her friends came to me and were like, we're so sorry. Like, and I'm still friends with them, and it's just interesting. There's like a whole group. There's all these people who are like, they like stay at a hotel and take photo shoots at a nice hotel, but they sleep on a mattress on the floor. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's and like, very weird.
Yeah. Like, so it's become this whole culture of pretending to be better than we are. And what that does is that people who don't have those things, they feel bad about themselves. And those people aren't being honest about how shitty their circumstances actually are. So we're living in this fake world that's where I come from. That's not cool. I grew up going to Pantera concerts and like listening to Nirvana and going to see Korn and Hatebreed and Slipknot and Meshuggah and Dillinger Escape Plan and bands like Candir, like all that. I was in the hardcore scene, and everything was like, we didn't have much, but at least we had each other.
And it was real what you had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was real. You just get in there, you go in, you show up, you get dirty. Concerts were like church for us.
And what's crazy is that for so long, parents, society, whatever, would talk about, oh, the heavy metal, it's dangerous, these rock shows, whatever. Now there's all this scientific research coming out that actually heavy metal is cathartic, and metal fans, it actually helps put you in a better mood. Like, they're actually studying this stuff, and it's like, hey, we were right all along.
Yeah, this well, is I mean, good. It's, yeah, I mean, our parents didn't know any better. I don't know. I wonder if they were like, I wonder if a band like Slayer was out during the Vietnam War, what that would have looked like. They wouldn't. Everyone would have been hippies taking acid. They'd be like, we're going to burn this place down. We're going to hell.
But then you see.
But they didn't have that.
But then you look at a guy like Vinnie Paul or Dimebag Darrell, mm-hmm. who, our audience has known through the years, yeah. or even a guy like Zoltan.
Yeah.
Who is truly out there just enjoying it.
Yeah.
You can't be riding around Vegas in a bright orange Lamborghini and not loving life, Zoltan.
He's living the American dream. You know, Zoltan comes from a communist Hungary that was impoverished and controlled by communism. Like, all, you know, and there's like kind of this weird resurgence of like Marxism in like young people and millennials. Like, and
he's the most patriotic American yeah. I've ever met. He yeah. loves this country but the, with every fiber but
he
of under, his being.
He understands the value right. as an immigrant right. who is self-made. He came to this country with $300 maybe and didn't know any English and taught himself and got a job and did what it takes. And he deserves to be where he is. He personifies the mm-hmm. American dream. Yeah,
absolutely.
But he also is a survivor of what communism is. And so it's like kind of funny. All these kind of a lot of people think that these kind of socialist ideals that are getting re-injected into the newer generation by people, you know, because they don't, these kids are young. They don't know.
It.
They don't know. Right. Yeah, they don't. It's violent and it's horrible and it never works. There's no history of communism ever working. So it's just like, it's crazy, like, what kind of ideas people are easily manipulated into purchasing and buying and believing are real.
You just got to get a passport and do a little traveling.
Yeah.
And it's pretty easy to figure out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've been to a lot of countries, so yeah.
But he is
I'm
one of the
pretty happy
guys.
Here.
Yeah.
It's pretty sick. You guys, we got food and running water, and the biggest problem is there's too many calories.
Yeah.
Like,
so
people
we gotta
like,
work out every
yeah,
day, man.
We're like, man, I gotta go to the gym and work out because I'm getting too many calories. You go to Somalia, you ask them about calories. You know what I mean?
I'll take all of
yeah.
them.
Yeah. Or South America, you know?
Well, I Anywhere. Love the fact that the fun is still in rock and roll. I love yeah. that the shows are still parties, but I also love that artists are out there not only trying to help the fans, but that you're being so open and honest about yourself. It's really admirable, and it takes a lot of strength to go up on stage and bare your soul the way that you do. And it's yeah. really important because, like you said, all those fans are looking up at you. All of those kids like you were back in the way back in the 90s when you were going to
way
shows.
Back.
But now you're in that position where you are showing those kids, you know what? It's not perfect, yeah. but it gets better.
But the reality is that it's just a principle. The principle for me is that what other people think of me is none of my business. And it's like a grounding principle of humility. So I'm not some rock star. I don't care. I don't care how many records we sell or how big of a show we play. Like, I don't even like that term. I'm just a guy who is lucky enough to do what he loves to do, and people pay to see it. You know what I mean? But that also goes, like, I've been homeless. I've literally been a homeless drug addict. You know what I mean? And I've been here, and I've been all every phase of life in between. I've been in bands for years where nobody cared who I was, you know? And so none of that stuff matters. It doesn't define us. Like, our jobs don't define us. Many people, I've had every kind of job that I hated. That's not who I am. You know what I mean? Every day that we wake up, we get to choose every single day who we're going to be for that day. Life is a 24-hour marathon. That's all. It's all last.
You're incredibly positive for somebody that's been through so much. It's inspiring.
Yeah, but I mean, what are you going to do? Like, I mean, that's the thing. You know, I had to get over, you know, getting through like suicidal depression and post-traumatic stress disorder for me was getting over myself. Like, sometimes the hardest thing a person will do is get the fuck over themselves. And for me, I don't allow myself self-pity. Like, resentment is a huge offender in people's lives. I learned how to master resentments because you see what other people have, you see what you don't have, you start measuring up, and then all of a sudden you're like, ugh, like, you start not liking things and not liking people, and because you're focusing on what you don't have rather than focusing on what you do have. If you want to be a multimillionaire, you got to spend every second of your day trying to make millions of dollars. If you want to feel like a multimillionaire, all you have to do is take an inventory of what you already have in your life to be grateful for. And people don't talk about that. They don't teach this in schools. They don't, you know, it's this. These concepts and ideas are the complete antithesis of consumerism. You look at the news and you look at what they're selling products. Everything is built to give us anxiety as a culture, as our whole citizenry is like, you look at the, you know, the last election, they split the country completely in half. These people are like this. These people are like that.
And these people hate you and you hate them. Yeah. We all hate each other.
And we're all, and look what happens as the result of that. Like, we're brothers and sisters. We're Americans. Like, the thing that makes this country so great is that we have the right to think and feel however the f*** we want. When you go to other places, you're not even allowed to say bad things about your government in other countries. And people here are spoiled. We are. We've had it too good for too long. And like, what happens is that everyone starts getting at each other's throat and not looking at the source of like, who stands to benefit from people in the one nation not getting along with each other? Who stands to benefit? People are making money off of that. You know, whether it's Facebook and Instagram getting engagement and Twitter boosting engagement. You know, like, people complain about Donald Trump's Twitter. They'll never get him off of there, because without Donald Trump, no one would be on Twitter anymore. Twitter would just be like porn stars selling snuff, you know, and whatever. Because what else is there? It's a place where people go to argue about politics and sports, really, in real time. You know, it's streams of consciousness. So it's just like, all of the concepts about choosing a life that is fulfilling and happy, that doesn't really require
stop.
It's nice to have nice things, but that doesn't make you who you are.
Right.
It's nice to have a great job, but that doesn't make you who you are. The question is, like, can I be happy with nothing? I've had nothing and been like, I'm okay, you know? So I don't know, you know, sometimes people get so overwhelmed with the pursuit of happiness that they forget to have happiness in the pursuit. And no one talks about that.
You should teach a class.
Nobody wants to hear that.
No, seriously. I mean, people are watching this right now and they're like, yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just, you know, it is what it is.
Well, I think you're fascinating.
Thanks. I think I'm a weirdo.
Yeah, but I'm into that. I like that.
Yeah, all right. Weirdos.
Weirdos.
We are the weirdos. We are the weirdos.
We are the weirdos, but that's what makes us powerful, is that we all have this rock and roll club where none of us look the same and none of us act the same. But at the show, in the moment, we're all the same. We're all singing the song together. The heads are banging together. The fists are in the air together.
Yeah.
That's what makes this music so powerful. And that's why anybody that doesn't understand rock music, I don't understand you. Because
not know yet.
Well, we'll have to.
I've brought some people to like concerts and they're like, oh my God, like, that was crazy, you know?
Well, I've been saying for years that the hip hop guys, you know, that they started just doing what they saw rock stars doing.
Yeah, know? Yeah, like the new school hip hop guys, like, I think Kanye led that. They took a page out of the hair metal and they were like, you know, made it into this excessive thing of consumerism, which had its place, but hair metal got killed by grunge.
Yeah.
Because you can only go off that for so long.
Hair can only get so high. I'll show you the picture of me in the 80s.
Yeah? Who's your favorite hair metal band?
Well, I'm pretty sure John Bon Jovi still has a restraining order against me.
Really?
I used to dream when I was a teenager, so embarrassing.
Really?
That his tour bus would break down in front of my house and he would knock on the door for directions.
Wow, that's amazing. That's a very specific dream.
That was and I lived at the end of a cul-de-sac. Wasn't happening.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
And out of all of the bands and all the people I've met along the years, it's been 21 years I've been on the air, he's one of the only people I've never met.
Wow. I saw a guy with a license plate that said Bon Jovi actually 2 days ago.
See, and I want to know what he smells like too. Well, you were in New Jersey. So.
Yeah. I'll
so if you ever meet him, will you smell him for me too? You do know him?
Yeah, we're friends.
Really?
No. No, sorry. Can't help you there.
Tommy, come on, man.
Look, I can't know everybody. Okay, well, I got to meet him first.
Okay.
He might throw me through a table.
That's fine, but while you're falling back, just
what if I FaceTime you?
I don't even know how I would handle
that. Dwayne, do you hear this? We need your help, okay?
I've had people that have been on the movie sets when he's filmed up here.
Yeah.
Say, they've called me on the air and been like, Mr. Scary, The Rock just walked by me, smelled pretty good. And I'm like, really? Why are you screwing with me like that? Like, I just want to know.
That's
like,
weird.
He looks like somebody that smells really good.
I guess. I only saw him one time at I used to live in Beverly Hills, right? That's how you
I can't imagine you living in Beverly Hills.
It's really weird. I ran a nonprofit for a little while, and so like I relocated over there to work at this nonprofit organization that my friend and I started, and that's where he was from. But I went to this gym in Beverly Hills, and the WME building is above the gym. And we came out one time, and I was like, "That's The Rock." I just kept going, like didn't bother him. Didn't want to bother him.
See, I would.
You would?
Yeah, because I would have bothered him.
Yeah, but you can't.
I would have been that person.
You gotta leave him. You gotta let him be. You know.
I know, but
I toured with Korn.
Superman has kryptonite. Okay, yeah. Everybody has a weakness.
Well, so Korn was one of my favorite bands growing up, and I was a backup singer for In This Moment on a Korn tour like 6 years ago, and I didn't say anything to him the whole tour till the last day, and I was like, "Excuse me, Mr. Davis." I asked the security guard first. I was like, "Is it okay if I take a picture?" And he was like, "Yeah, dude."
Yeah, and he was took like, it, right?
Yeah, Tommy. I was like, "He knows my name."
Because he's cool as
Yeah, Dave Grohl knows my name too. This is crazy. I'm gonna tell you this whole story.
All right, hold on, let me get comfortable.
This is gonna be a really long. So this is how I'm not cool. First
you
of all,
you are cool.
No, but I'm like a music geek. I'm still a music nerd.
Yeah, but
so
all I freak of us out. Are music nerds.
Yeah, yeah. So listen, Dave Grohl it's the Dime Bash, right? So it's the annual Dime Bash in Anaheim, California. Jose Mangan is hosting. Rita, you know, Dimebag's old lady, she throws this thing every year. They asked me to sing two songs. So I'm
you
like...
You said yes.
Yeah, I said yes. So it was like me, Corey Taylor. There was like half of Anthrax. I mean, it was crazy. There were guys from Testament. It was just like, it was insane. So it was like super cool, great vibes backstage. Big party in the back for the VIPs. Everyone was in town for NAMM. And...
Which is Dave, this huge music convention it's, yeah, that takes
the
over
North
LA
American Music Merchants or something
yeah,
like that.
Whatever it is.
And it's cool. And then I'm endorsed by JBL, so Bad Wolves went and did an acoustic performance at the JBL Harmon booth, which was cool too. But anyway, so Dave Grohl was just barbecuing.
He does that.
Yeah, he showed up. He made food. He had like smoked out ribs for
he
24 hours.
He has like a giant grill that he like tows
oh, yeah.
around.
Oh, it's like it goes to a hitch on yeah. his car. Yeah, it's crazy. And delicious ribs, by the way. So everyone's hanging and he's just there and people like freaked out. Like even the VIPs are like, "It's Dave Grohl." And
he's
we're all
gotten to that level.
Yeah. Well,
everybody
look,
knows who
okay,
Dave Grohl
he,
is.
Okay, Nirvana and Foo Fighters. Okay. I mean, listen. It's an intergenerational rock starism, okay? And I'm just going to get to it. And I'm talking to my friend Liz, and she's like, "He's just standing right there. Like, oh, my God, his hair is so beautiful." And I'm like, "I know. Like, I can't believe it. He's right there." And he's like, "Hey, Tommy." And I literally paused. I was like...
Is there another Tommy anywhere?
And there's all these people waiting to get food. They've been waiting online for like an hour because the food's not ready. And I was like, "Me?" And he's like, "Yeah, Tommy Vex, right?" I was like, "Uh-huh." And he's like, "Are you hungry?" I was like, "I'm really hungry." He's like,
"I have push-ups to do in the back of my truck, dude. Of course I'm hungry."
He's like, "Hold on." And he goes and he gets me some ribs. And people were like, "Oh," he's like, "Oh, he's got low blood sugar. He's got to eat." And he lied to them for me. And he gives me the ribs. And he's like, "Oh, yeah, Battle's cool, man." Like, I was like, I'm like, "Dude, you're the coolest person in the world." And he's like, "Oh, no." I was like, no, listen. You're the Bill Murray of rock and roll.
I never heard that.
Because
I like that
that's
description.
What Bill Murray just shows up places and he'll just bartend. He'll just show up somewhere. He goes to people's weddings. He just shows up.
Who's going to tell him to get
yeah,
out?
Yeah, and he
no
takes
one.
Pictures with people and then he leaves. And he just is like, "Cool." Or he'll like go and pay for someone's dinner or like take a bite of their food and be like, "No one will believe you." Like there's a whole documentary about Bill Murray doing weird things like this and keeping it real. And I was like, "That's what you are." I was like, "You're the Bill Murray of rock and roll." And Dave Grohl said, that is the nicest thing that anyone has ever said to me.
See, now I told him he's the biggest whore in rock and roll.
But then I said this. I was like, did we just become best friends? And then he said, yes.
So you're Dave Grohl's best friend.
We're best friends. Me and Dave.
You heard it.
Yeah. I haven't talked to him since that very moment. However...
Yeah, but best friends, you don't have to talk.
You don't have to talk all the time.
You could see him just 5 years from now. Just once in a while,
and be like, Dave, what's up? Like, yeah, yeah. So that's my Dave Grohl story. And then I was so Chris and John have a barbecue company called Doghouse Barbecue. It's on Instagram, and they do competitions. Chris and John from Bad Wolves. So Chris watched the whole thing go down. And I walked up to him. I was like, do you want a rib? And he's like, hell yeah, I want a rib. He's like, what just happened? He's
became best friends with Dave Grohl.
I'm best friends with Dave Grohl. We're going to do karate in the basement. It's going to be crazy. So, yeah, that's the Dave Grohl story. And I was, like, bugging out.
He is cool. Yeah.
He's so cool.
Yeah. When he had this broken leg and he had the little thing, they played Fenway Park. And he was – so you got to imagine somebody born and raised in Boston.
Yeah.
And their dressing room was the Red Sox locker room.
Yeah.
And I go in there to interview him. And I feel like I'm already walking on sacred ground just because I get to go in the locker room of the Red Sox. And there's Dave on his little, you know, his little trolley thing that he was zooming around on.
Yeah.
And he was like, come on in, sit down. And like literally within 5 seconds of meeting the guy, he's one of those guys that you really do feel like, well, wow, I'm best friends with this guy all of a sudden. Like he's just nice.
He's the best dude ever.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
You know, I need to meet Bill Murray, and then I need to get backstage passes to a Foo Fighters show so I could be the person to introduce Bill Murray to Dave Grohl.
That would be like the Ghostbusters crossing of the streams. Like, what would happen? Yeah. We just don't know.
I know who could handle... You know who could make this happen for us?
The Rock.
The Rock.
Yeah. It always goes back to The Rock, I told you. The Rock is the center of the universe.
It's true.
And Jeff Goldblum, but we'll talk about that later.
She's kind of weird.
I know. That's kind of
creepy.
I know.
Yeah. Okay.
That's why I'm into it. Tommy, it was such a pleasure.
Yeah.
Will you please come and hang out with me in the studio? Then I told Doc when he was up with Mark Morton.
Yeah.
I was like, when you guys come to town, I want you to come up and play acoustic in the studio. And he was like, yeah, we'll totally do it. And then you guys come to town on a Saturday when I'm not on the air.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
So I don't know if you know this, but I don't make the schedule. But I'm more than happy to the next time.
The thing about
the radio station is you could actually just go in there whenever you wanted to.
Well, I mean, we could go there right now.
Okay, let's go.
Sick. If you really want.
Interview's right, over now.
Well, I can't wait to see you guys tonight.
It's going
to
be fun.
I'm going to walk out of here like you walked away with the ribs, and I'm just going to tell everybody that you and I are best friends now, because that's how I feel right now.
Yeah, we're best friends.
Yeah, we're best
friends. We talked about a lot of things.
We did. I think we solved a lot of the world's problems.
I feel like we're like Shaggy and Scooby.
Who's who?
I'm the dog. And this backstage is our mystery machine. Anyways.
I gotta get out of here. Tommy from Bad Wolves. Thank you guys for checking out the video.
Mistress Carrie. Weekdays 10 to 3 on WAAF. Podcasts are always online and on your schedule at WAAF.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.